Morning Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
House Bill 921, Representative Overdorf.
Members, in a digital age, we must not lose sight of the foundational skills that connect us to our history and sharpen our minds. If our students can't read cursive writing, they can't read the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, or even a grandparent's handwritten letter. Cursive writing isn't just a skill, it's a link to our heritage and a lifelong learning.
Yeah, one of the more interesting conversations, I don't pay attention to all the bills, you know, I pay attention to the ones that catch my interest or that I think you will find interesting, and, you know, I watch the conversations. I'm a big believer in watching the conversations. The News Service of Florida does a great job of summarizing certain things, but I'm a, you know, I want to watch the county commission meeting. I don't, you know, I like Jim Little, but I don't want to read his report on the county commission meeting. I want to watch the county commission meeting. You know, that's kind of my bent. And, you know, when Molly Barrows writes her great articles for the PNJ, I want to watch the meeting, and, you know, I want to watch city council meeting. Same thing with these meetings in Tallahassee is I just think it's interesting when people argue and discuss and give their perspective and when you can hear their voices, because it's different than just reading it in print. And in this case, the bill is to make, the teaching of cursive mandatory in three grades. Well, I guess it'd be four grades instead of three, because right now we teach it in third through fifth. This would make it mandatory in second through fifth. But there is an additional thing that we'll add if this bill passes, which it will definitely pass based on the discussion and the vote in the House yesterday, or maybe it's the day before. Anyway.
This bill adds writing to the cursive writing to the statutorily required instruction for students grades 2 through 5. And the bill also defines proficiency in cursive writing as the ability to write upper and lower case letters in cursive, writing words and sentences legibly with proper spacing and alignment, and the ability to read and apply cursive writing so as to support literacy requirements.
It's the proof of capacity. It's a proficiency test. We don't have that now. So you can be taught it, but you don't have to be able to do it in order to, graduate fifth grade. we don't have ceremonies typically, but so should we have not only teaching of cursive, which we do, but not as much as we should, as according to the bill? And should we have a proficiency requirement that students are actually able to read it and to write it? 437-1620, weigh in and tell me what you think about the requirement to have cursive. John, are you a printer or cursive?
Oh, I'm cursive.
Really?
Yes.
There's like 1% of all men that write in cursive. I mean, I make up the statistic, but it's a very low percentage.
Well, it's because my kids can't read it. I mean, I'm being honest.
It's your encoded writing.
Exactly.
Okay. So you write with all the continuous lettering, letter to the next, the B's, the R's, all that stuff, the way it flows. Okay, interesting. I'm a 100% print. I have to sit down and think, now, how do you make that B again if I have to write in cursive for something or other? I can do it, but it's not, you know, a fresh skill. And you think, like, that serves your, like, everything is cursive for you?
No, not everything, but a majority of it is.
Really?
What I don't type.
Interesting. Yeah. No, I don't know what the numbers are. It's always been my perception that it's a higher percentage of women that write in cursive than men.
Thanks.
So, yeah, you're welcome.
like, what?
Well, okay, think about it this way. One of the classic arguments in favor of cursive is that you'll be able to read the card that came to you from grandma. Nobody ever says you'll be able to read the card that came to you from grandpa. Of course, that's also in part because grandpa's not the one sending the cards. But
you know who's doing it.
Now, question, when you write in cursive, and I learned this yesterday, I didn't know it. I confirmed it with my wife, too, who taught our kids, of course, cursive. When you write cursive, do you write it on a slant, on an angle, or do you write the letters straight up and down? I'm 100% sure you write it on a here. Write out just a sentence, like write it on the back of some paper. Grab it, and I'll do some handwriting analysis. You know, write my name if you want. Because what has happened is over the years they realize that you don't have to. The reason you do it on a slant, at like 20 degrees off of 90 slant, is because the quill pens historically, the way those worked in order to keep the ink in the pen, apparently. You really needed to write it at an angle to make that happen.
Well, I'm left-handed, I
you're
end
double
up
weird.
With just
okay.
Mirrors.
All right, a lot of things.
But yeah, I guess
let
it goes
see,
at
see,
an
let
angle.
Let me see. No, that's straight up and down.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's kind of a mixture of
because I was at a weird
angle to the left, angle to the right.
See, I wanted to mess with you.
A bunch of things I can't read. No, the typical angle that you write at, something like maybe 70 degrees, okay, they're now teaching it at 90 degrees, and it's easier for the kids to perform, and they don't, you know, it looks different, okay? So this conversation, though, about handwriting and about whether you need to teach them the ability to write in cursive or not, it's at what cost, right? Because teaching cursive takes time. Let's say it takes maybe 20 minutes a day. Maybe a half hour. I mean, it depends. And you got to teach them for, let's say, I don't know, 3 weeks. Okay, so if you do 20 minutes a day and you got 3 weeks times 5 days a week, 15, that's 5-ish hours of instructional time total, if that's all you do. And that's probably a low number. And in a curriculum where we are already not teaching enough of all the things, what comes at the expense of teaching cursive? Well, I mean, what's the next closest thing that you wouldn't teach? What's the, there, you know, three ways of communicating. There's print, cursive, and keyboarding, right? Or what old people like us would call typing. And which one is more important? Well, if you teach them cursive at the expense of keyboarding or typing, which one's more valuable? I can tell you that every single day of my life since I've been... Gosh, probably since I learned it, maybe not quite, but certainly since I graduated high school, every single day of my life, unless I'm like stuck in nature somewhere, I have typed. Typing is an essential skill for me in my life. I have probably used cursive 5 times in the last decade. You know, like it would probably have been writing my wife some love note. You know, because it seems like it's more elegant. It's more formal. It's more,
but,
you know.
Something I want to say is that, you know, the kids get a lot of typing when they're at home on their keyboards playing games. And like my son could do so many words a minute. I'm just like blown away. But here's the thing.
So we don't need to teach them keyboarding because the video games will cover that for us.
Oh, yes. Or the chats or, yeah, right. You know,
well,
whatever they're doing.
The chat in the game. Right.
But not teaching cursive. How are you going to do a signature?
Yeah, no, that's one of the questions.
Do you have a signature?
And the answer is you don't have to have a cursive signature. You can have print for a signature. You can have a...
I know my children do it.
Diplity doodle, you know?
Right.
You know, you could have like... who was the Secretary of the Treasury that had the... I'm trying to remember who it was. It just looked like a line of squiggles. It's from a couple of years ago. One of the Obama administration guys, I think, if I remember correctly. And it just looked like loop, 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 he's done. You know, and you can have that. You could have an X. I mean, historically, that was used for, you know, illiterate people. But you don't have to have a cursive signature, which feels super wrong.
It feels weird.
Like, what's wrong with you that you can't? But, you know, the argument that you can't read grandma's letter, well, you know, do you need to be able to read the Constitution in its original version? Or can you just, I mean, I've read the Constitution a lot. I always read it in text on a computer screen. Or in print, in a, you know, I carry one with me usually in my bag. So, but I don't.
You what? Do?
Yeah, all normal Americans keep a Constitution handy.
What?
Well, I mean.
No wonder your bag's really full. Sitting here looking at it going, that gum, boy. What else we got
I mean,
in there?
You know, you should have a Bible handy. You should have a Constitution handy. You should have a gun handy. I mean, there's just basic necessities of life.
All right here.
Oh, it's all in your. Yeah, it's good until the website goes down or the app. Anyway, so back to the point. I'm very on the fence on cursive, frankly. And it might be a little bit unfair because I learned cursive. I probably benefited from cursive. It's an odd thing to go back and say, I don't know that it was necessary to have the instructional time and something that I have the benefit of having. And by the way, this is way more than just, can you read grandma's signature? Can you read the Constitution? You know, do you have a signature? Or can you read grandma's letters? It's way more than that. There are, you know, at least some demonstrated cognitive and or, you know, physical capabilities, small motor control, fine motor control issues that come from learning cursive and not only learning print.
Many studies to show the benefits of this, not just the historical side, but the fact of what it does for the brain. And can you share that?
Representative Overdorf.
Absolutely. It certainly has major cognitive benefits, has the ability then with hand-eye coordination. I actually just met with some parent groups this morning that said it also helps with the early diagnosis of dyslexia as well. And so it may be an opportunity there that now with all of these different skills put in place could actually provide a even a better foundation for our students.
Yeah, and I read some of the studies yesterday and, you know, in kind of preparation for thinking about this, which I had not ever read before. And, you know, it's interesting. It's things like the sectors of your brain that are in use when you're using, when you're writing in cursive as opposed to when you're writing in print. And certainly when you're writing as opposed to when you're typing are, you know, different. The ability to control the pen and honestly to identify letters. One of the, it's just, there's so much neuroscience involved in all of this that, like, for instance, identifying a letter as a kid, you know, a kid who's learning the language, identifying an H versus a B versus a D, for instance, is kind of a complicated skill. You know, there are real discrete parameters that you use and you ignore a bunch of information in order to figure out which letter is that and what sound does that represent or stand for, as a, you know, alphabet does. And then when it's in cursive, it's a little bit different set of things you use, and it's a little bit more challenging, okay? It's a little bit harder because the letters visually look more similar than the print letters look, and so it's easier to get it wrong. And that that teaches your brain to have to be more picky, more choosy, more selective, more discerning, and very differently from, you know, reading print that's like text written out by a computer, which always gets it right every single time. Like the very act of identifying a B versus a D is a pretty high cognitive skill. And it's harder when it's handwriting because everybody's handwriting is different. And you have to learn, well, that is a meaningful difference. That changes the letter. That is not a meaningful difference. That's still the same letter. And as we all know, reading sloppy handwriting or reading somebody else's handwriting can be more challenging. Reading print on a screen or print on a book, in a book, if they exist anymore, is much easier because the visual cues are clearer. And so there's an element of high cognitive function involved in picking out letters from either writing them or reading them. The continuity between letters, that they're connected as opposed to being discrete things in print versus cursive, is another element of sort of cognitive development and also, you know, small fine motor skill. So there are things here connected to like artistic ability, which side of the brain is functioning in this. And I'm just kind of running through a bunch of like overviews of how the use of cursive or the teaching of cursive changes your brain, develops your brain, prepares you for other kinds of things in your life and the way your brain works and all that. But kind of all of that has value. But the core question, I think the real core, and by the way, it is Common Core that got rid of it. It was 2011 or something like that is when we got rid of it, and then we brought it back. And, you know, I mean, if you want to hate a thing, hate it because it was part of Common Core, right? So, but just the basic ability for citizens to communicate effectively with each other.
I want you to know that, because I think this is where you're going, private schools still do this. My kids all do it, and their friends came over that were at public schools, and they had no idea what they were doing. So I appreciate you bringing this bill forward.
We don't want to have a two-tiered system of society where we have the public school kids and the private school kids, and the private school kids can read the cursive and the public school kids cannot.
So I hired a 27-year-old to work in my office, and I wrote her a note, and she brought it back to me and asked me to read it to her because it was in cursive. So I just wanted to let you know, because of that, I am waving in support. I'm going to support this bill.
But isn't that amazing to think that there would be, you know, a whole age cohort or a public school cohort or just people who you, I mean, you assume everybody can manage to function with cursive. I mean, there's some people who are just illiterate and they can't read at all. But when people who can read and write, you assume it's going to be a little harder maybe for them to get cursive, but they can get it. Well, not always, right? So they passed this 17-0 out of committee. It's easily going to sail through House and Senate and get signed into law, I'm sure. And again, this does not restore us from not teaching cursive to teaching cursive, like the driver's ed thing. Oh, my God. That we don't do driver's ed in some places or don't have actual driving on the roads. What? You know, anyway, but Michelle Salzman is working on that one. But the cursive one, it's not that they're not doing it. It's that they're not requiring you to be good at it and that they're not doing it as much. So it's in exchange for what we don't teach is the question. Oh, somebody sent me a really interesting text. They said they showed me the 2025 graduation from UWF, just the printed out commencement flyer. And at the top of it, it's got, this is not UWF. Sorry, is this UWF? I can't make this out. They don't say. Anyway, it might be Gulf Breeze High School. But the top, it says baccalaureate. Oh, yeah, UWF. Baccalaureate. And it's in script. It's in not quite calligraphy, maybe a little bit, but you know, it's cursive. And they said none of the kids could read this. That's bad, right? That's bad. Anyway, so I thought it was an interesting subject. I wanted to make you aware this is happening. It may not be the biggest thing that the legislature is doing, but as you can see, it's one of those things that touches on a lot of other elements. 525 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
The Bayou Hills Run, the official 5K and 10K City of Pensacola Championships, is back on March 29th at beautiful Bayview Park. It's called the Bayou Hills Run for a reason. These hills are no joke, but push through and you'll be rewarded with an epic post-race party the whole family will love. Sign up now at BayouHillsRun.org. The course takes you along scenic Bayou Tahar, winding through East Hill's stunning tree-lined streets before finishing back at the park. Every finisher in the 5K, 10K, and kids run gets a medal. And once you cross that finish line, celebrate with great food, drinks, music, and plenty of fun for the whole family, including a playground for the kids. Race day is March 29th, so don't wait. Register now at BayouHillsRun.org and bring the whole crew. The Bayou Hills Run, the official City of Pensacola Championship, a Pensacola sports event.
This is the story of the one. He's responsible for keeping a leading healthcare facility clean and safe. And he trusts Grainger's high-quality HVAC cleaning and safety products, combined with their world-class supply chain, to consistently deliver, ensuring he's covered inside and out, so he can focus on keeping his facility clean to help protect the health of everyone inside. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
During tax season, your personal info travels to a lot of places you can't control. Between payroll, your home office, your tax preparer, and the IRS, if your W-2 gets exposed, that's just the ticket for identity thieves. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second. If your identity's stolen, they'll fix it guaranteed or your money back. Don't let identity thieves take you for a ride. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code CLAY. Visit LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
At Pinnair Credit Union, we know that road trips don't start by driving into the sunset. A day at the beach doesn't begin with packing the car. Even car shopping doesn't really start at the dealership. Your new car journey begins with an auto loan pre-approval from Pinnair Credit Union, because at Pinnair, auto financing is easy. And when you get pre-approval before you shop, you'll be ready to hit the road when you find the perfect car. Get started at Pinnair.org/car loan. Whether it's new, used, or refinanced, vehicle loans from Pinnair Credit Union fit you perfectly. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Local talk during your morning and afternoon drive. Local news every hour. On News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Do they have a code clearance?
It's an older code, sir, but it checks out.
Yeah, you may not know that song. That's a second side cut from the Cars Heartbeat City, Stranger Eyes. One of my favorite songs by the Cars that probably never made any airtime on the radio at all, but I love that song. 528 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Good morning, gentlemen. Well, President Trump says U.S. officials are headed to Russia to talk about a possible ceasefire with Ukraine. This after Ukraine agreed to the ceasefire after negotiations with the U.S. here earlier this week. Meanwhile, the head of NATO today will be in Washington to meet with President Trump, where they're expected to talk about this as well. All of the remaining migrants at Guantanamo Bay have now been moved back stateside. A Defense Department official said Wednesday 40 men that were being held at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba have now been flown to an ICE facility in Louisiana, where they're awaiting deportation.
So it was vacation.
Apparently, yeah.
Now they're back home. All right, go on.
And NASA is going to have to try again tonight to launch a mission to retrieve the two stranded astronauts on the International Space Station. Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams have now been stuck on the International Space Station since last June when their Boeing Starliner spacecraft, I don't know, what's the right word, broke down. Our space shuttle broke down.
Spark plugs didn't work. All right. No, it was a safety check, right? I mean, one of their safety thresholds didn't get met, and so they scrubbed the mission. And that's what you want, because, you know, when you don't scrub the mission, you get bad things, you know? So we'll take that alternative. I still think it's kind of funny. Like, on the one hand, yeah, stuck for an awful long time. On the other hand, stuck in a place that was, like, their whole life's dream to go to and most people's life's dream to go to. You know, there are, as I said, I think yesterday, there are far worse things than being stuck in the International Space Station.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. It would take the support of at least 7 Senate Democrats to pass a spending bill and prevent a government shutdown this weekend. Top Senate Democrat Chuck Schumer says the votes aren't there and suggests a 30-day spending bill.
That will keep the government open and give Congress time to negotiate bipartisan legislation that can pass.
Florida Republican Ashley Moody on Fox.
If this is a shutdown, it'll be the Schumer shutdown. This is completely on the hands of the Democrats.
The House would have to return from recess to pass anything new. Russia's President Putin visits a command post near the border with Ukraine.
Putin met commanders in Russia's Kursk region and was told that Ukraine has now lost 86% of the land it seized in an offensive last summer. President Putin told generals to complete the job as soon as possible.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. Russian state media reports Trump envoy Steve Witkoff has arrived in Russia for talks. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 64 degrees, partly cloudy this morning in Pensacola. Well, about 100 people in Escambia County's District 1 gathered yesterday to express some concerns about the proposed move for the Pensacola Dog Track Poker Room. Wind Creek Hospitality is proposing moving that a little bit closer to the interstate.
What's being proposed is an ordinance change because this pari-mutuel wagering doesn't exist in any of our zoning districts. It's not an allowed use in any of the districts.
Now, about 100 people were at a public meeting yesterday. Many of them voiced fears about potential increases in traffic and crime in the proposed new location. Commissioner Steve Stroberger stressed the importance of community input before any zoning changes are considered. Now, two astronauts stuck at the International Space Station since last June are going to have to wait just a little bit longer.
A 4-person crew was set to launch from Cape Canaveral Wednesday evening. The mission, though, was aborted about an hour before takeoff because of a hydraulic issue with the clamps holding the Falcon 9 rocket in place. The 4-member team would have relieved Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams, who have been on the station since their Boeing Starliner spacecraft was deemed unsafe for them to return to Earth in. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
Thank you very much, Tammy. Rick Scott wants the Trump administration to take more steps to protect Florida farmers. Scott sent a letter yesterday to Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins. He asked Rollins to make sure Florida has access to disaster aid in the form of block grants when requested. Scott said this would allow for greater flexibility in addressing the specific needs of agricultural communities in the state. He also wants the administration to strengthen oversight of land purchases by foreign entities. Scott asked the Trump administration to prevent Florida growers and producers from being harmed by Mexico's dumping of produce into the U.S. It's 25 years in prison for a Pensacola man that was convicted of stealing a truck and shooting at the vehicle's owner with his own gun. 42-year-old Aubrey Grandison was in court this week. He was sentenced on Tuesday. That sentence will be served day for day. Prosecutors say Grandison stole a truck from a convenience store on Garden Street February 20th of 2023. The owner of the vehicle saw Grandison taking the truck and jumped in the bed. Grandison then, according to prosecutors, shot at that man with his own gun as he drove down the road. Eventually, he was taken into custody after Escambia County deputies stopped the vehicle with a pit maneuver. It is 534 News Radio 92.3. Right now, we've got 65 degrees in Pensacola, 65 in Gulf Breeze, and we've got 56 right now in Milton. Your next news. At 6 o'clock, we've got breaking news. Anytime it happens, I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. A failed contract between United Steelworkers and ATI boils down to money and respect, according to some who voted against the six-year deal. The former contract, which the union and company continue to operate under, will be extended through April 30th while negotiations continue. Intel said it has named Lip-Bu Tan as its new CEO. Tan was previously the CEO of Cadence Design Systems, which makes software used by all the major chip designers, including Intel. Tan's appointment comes 3 months after Pat Gelsinger resigned from the CEO role. The latest consumer price index said egg prices continue to climb in February. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reports egg costs jumped another 10.4% last month, with the average price of a dozen large grade A eggs being $5.90. Futures are slightly lower ahead of additional inflation data later this morning. Thursday, the Dow Industrials lost 82, the NASDAQ up 212, the S&P 500 up 27. That's Your Money Now.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Bray. We love doing what we do and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Bray Jewelers.
Gun Show this weekend in Crestview, Florida. Hundreds of guns, knives, ammo, coins, and more. This is a buy-sell trade event. Private sales and sellers welcome. It's a brand new event located at 410 West James Lee Boulevard, Crestview, Florida. Saturday, 9 to 4, and Sunday, 10 to 3. Admission just $10 a person. Kids under 14 are free. Discounts for law enforcement, military, firefighters, and first responders. For more information, go to usagunshowsfl.com.
Hobbies can be fun and expensive. How about a hobby that's fun and could make you money? Find out this morning at 10 with Emerald Coast Coins. Hear about precious metals and metal detectors as a great hobby. For nearly 20 years, Emerald Coast Coins has been one of the top-rated businesses in Northwest Florida to buy and sell gold, silver, and the best metal detectors to find treasure. Get more information this morning on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Ready for intelligent and thought-provoking conversation? Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola. Weekdays from 2 till 4 p.m. on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Guy Benson, the brilliant and charismatic host, brings you a fresh perspective on the biggest stories of the day. Guy keeps you engaged and informed. Don't miss out on the intellectual thrill ride. Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola from 2 till 4 p.m. It's the show that'll challenge your thinking and leave you wanting more. On News Radio Pensacola.
Good morning, 538, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Happy Thursday, almost there. Yesterday, had a good chance to talk with Mayor D.C. Reeves, City of Pensacola Mayor D.C. Reeves. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me. Hope you're having a good morning.
I am. Do you ever get tired of being called Mr. Mayor, or have you gotten used to it? It seems like that'd be weird in the beginning.
You know, I forget what I'm actually called. I just answer. You know, whoever says anything. You
it sounds
know,
vaguely like
Mayor.
Darcy, I like it.
You know, I just say it. You know, the worst case scenario is when I'm in Washington, D.C. That's the worst case scenario.
At a D.C. talk concert in Washington, D.C., and people are, you know, it's very confusing
exactly.
for you, I can imagine.
When I'm there, that's the biggest problem.
Yeah. So much. Oh, my gosh. The press conference yesterday was chock full of information. Thank you for that. Excellent stuff. Yeah. Let's talk real briefly about just one thing because it had come up. The cemetery downtown, I just posted a video last night. I know you're well aware of this situation, that when you're going east on Garden and you're going towards Alconies, you have that stop sign and then to turn right, and then you have the, like, bend in the road with the 100,000 potholes you've got to navigate and, you know, then go north on Alconies. Obviously, recently we had somebody drive right through the stop sign and drive into the cemetery. If you look at the fencing, you can see that it has been damaged many times in the past. Seems like a safety problem. Yep. Seems like, you know, if more signage would help, then more signage would have already helped. It seems like maybe a barrier of some kind. I don't know whether we're talking about those kind of metal rails like you see on the interstate when you're going over a ditch, or somebody had proposed to me, what about the concrete barriers that, like the temporary ones that divide lanes in construction sites, but painted, like had mural work on them, maybe dolphins, maybe the locomotive, maybe something decorative that would actually stop a car, but also help save pedestrians in the cemetery. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that intersection or bend in the road, whatever you want to call it, is probably the best microcosm example of the relationship between the state road and the city operations, right? And that doesn't, that's not vilifying FDOT or the state road. They've been great partners with us on so many projects. But I think of it, what bothers me personally is that off-ramp coming south right there, same intersection, and how it looks, you know, in terms of the maintenance, in terms of, because that's the first impression you get when you get off the interstate into our downtown.
Yeah.
So if you've never been there before, you know, that really matters. And I joked during the IHMC groundbreaking or the ribbon cutting for the new building, I said, you know, half the fun of this is that we have something nice, you know, to look at, right, when you get off the interstate is this $40 million building, you know. And so, you know, so there's a, but it's a perfect example of Garden Street and Alconies at that section is a state road. And how it operates is certainly not a decision that we make. And that being said, you know what I always say, that doesn't mean it's not our problem or that we say, well, then let's not worry about it. But there's always limitations. You know, how much right of way do we have to put a barrier in? There's rules about how much room you need to have, because if you have a sidewalk 2 inches behind a barrier and someone hits the barrier, what good did it do? You know, I mean, if someone is now just pinned under a barrier, hypothetically. So there's other things that I don't understand all the ins and outs of that our public works team does, that we could go look at that. And, you know, concrete barriers from a decor perspective certainly are not ideal.
Well, definitely not great. I would definitely paint it. I mean, I would definitely, it can be decorative, in which case it becomes an amenity instead of a problem. But yeah, you know, concrete's not my favorite solution either.
And listen, I would say the example that we've corrected since I've been in that's the most similar to this is right there where Fairfield becomes 12th Avenue, right there at that bend we had. But that's a little different because it's kind of the back fence of houses, and it's not really a pedestrian necessarily a big pedestrian traffic area. So there's lots of things in the gumbo here to try to make that work.
Okay.
But certainly, I do not deny the need to look at that, and certainly you know we'll take a hard look because we just had that other episode, as you just mentioned,
right?
It happened yet again recently.
And of course, we all want to make sure and protect the historical cemetery. I mean, there's all these, you know,
of course,
we could find a solution, and as you say, even though it's not your baby, you know, maybe there's a way to help make the baby safer. You know, you can't control Graffiti Bridge, but maybe we can make the thing a little bit safer for people. You got the resident satisfaction survey came out. Very big positive number, 70% happy. Anything in there that really surprised you?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
You know, obviously, you know, there'll be different numbers that are good, you know, better than you think in terms of approval, worse than you think in terms of department by department. But, you know, not necessarily. I mean, obviously, I'm pleased that 70% of the citizens feel like we're going in the right direction, which really tells you two things. One, you know, that certainly instills confidence in us that we're trying to do the right thing here and that people notice that. And two, it's why you don't take echo chamber poll surveys off of Facebook on particular topics, right?
Right.
Because at the end of the day, you know, there's lots of silent majority residents out there that appreciate being the number four safest city. I mean, if you saw our we had like a 97% and a 79% favorability for fire and police, which is incredibly great. And that
right.
is not the case in many cities, I can tell you, across the country when I talk to mayors across the country. So feeling safe, you know, feeling like we're going the right direction isn't always measured in social media. It's measured in, you know, in living rooms and kitchens all around the city. And so that certainly instilled some confidence in us that whether you agree or disagree with every tactic we have, that our citizens feel like we're doing the right thing. And so So we were definitely pleased with that overall.
No, I agree. And it's, you know, the few loud people who are angry and motivated show up to city council, and it's easy to think that that's 50,000 people, and it's not. And, you know, the few loud, obnoxious, worked-up people who troll on Facebook, it's easy to think that that's everybody, and it's not. I loved, by the way, we'll talk about this in a second a little bit, I loved yesterday the Facebook post about the guy who was complaining about the red light cameras. And then everybody basically came to your defense, and you're like, hey, thanks for posting an example of why we have them. And people celebrated. That made my day, because it's such a common sense answer to what, you know, again, a few loud people who are opposed to them have kind of made, you know, the perception is that everybody hates them. Speaking of yesterday's press conference and some of the questions that are in your satisfaction survey, the idea of having a resident parking pass, and I know in advance, asterisk, nothing is final yet. Here's what I'm wondering. The argument seems to be city residents are already paying property taxes, which go to infrastructure. Therefore, city residents should get some kind of a benefit on parking, whether that's free parking, whether it's all the time, whether it's a day or a night, whether it's a share discount like 50 cents an hour instead of a buck an hour, whether you buy a discount like you spend 10 bucks, you get 40 bucks in credit, whatever it is. OK, any shape of that seems to me to run contrary to the stated purpose of having paid parking, which is to get spaces to turn over, because if you make parking free for people, they don't turn over spaces. If you make parking cheaper for people, they don't turn over spaces. Help me understand how I'm misunderstanding this.
Yeah, and listen, you're absolutely right, and that still is the case. It's about supply and demand, and you heard me say in the press conference, that's why there's more nuance. Let's use a common example. Let's talk about a gym membership. If we went to every citizen and said, hey, there's an $80 gym membership a month and everyone can have one for free if they're a city resident, we're going to have a bunch of people sign up for it, probably all 20,800 households, right? But if we say it's $30 a month or $20, and we don't know what that number is yet, but
gotcha.
then it, you start to limit to the people who, number one, are already parking and are part of that inventory count, so to speak, anyway, meaning they're working downtown. So, you know, it's still, that's why there has to be a cost, not because that money is going to be very consequential in the grand scheme of the parking application, but you just have to be able to delineate between, to your point, where you're not trying to flood the area. But you've hit on some of these things already. That's why we're looking at day or night. Do we look at certain zones? It might just be, hey, none of the permits work on Palo Fox Street, for example, but they do on Jefferson, or they do on Balin, or both. You know, that's what we're trying to look at, because this point allows me to point out the biggest misperception, excuse me, of all, which is that we have all of these paid spaces. Well, case in point, we have so few paid spaces that we have to be careful about saying, okay, you know, here are these permits. But again, what people forget, and you know, the quick tax lesson is, what people forget is, if you don't live in the city or you don't own property in the city, then whether you eat at 9 Mile Road or at the beach or downtown, from a tax standpoint, we want you to support our businesses. We got awesome downtown, no doubt about it. But from a pure tax standpoint, it does not matter where you eat or drink in Escambia County. The city receives the pro rata share of the population, so we receive 1/7, 1/6. Of the LOST tax for infrastructure, regardless of where you spend your money in the county. And so that's why when people say, I spend my tax dollars, I live in Cantonment or I live on the beach, that is not necessarily the case. But it is the case for our city residents. They are paying city taxes, and they are, you know, helping with our infrastructure. So we do need to do something about that. But to your point, that's the balance we need to find, is making sure. And sorry, one other thing, remember, 85% of the people parking using parking transactions downtown do not live in the city. So we got to keep that in context as well. Is that right now it is a very small sliver of the overall model of people that actually do live in the city.
And I take all of that. And you know, I understand that it's a balancing act, and I know you don't have the details just yet. It just that seemed to me kind of the, you know, the thrust had been, let's raise the price and the number of places where it goes from being free to being paid in order to facilitate turnover in the parking. And now we're going the other way as a fair giveaway to residents who are paying, but they work in tension with each other. That's all I wanted to bring up.
But that presumes that those people still paying, even if it's a lower amount, still paying for a parking pass every month, are now who were never parking downtown, were not part of the parking load, so to speak.
Right.
are now going to be, you know, and so that's why we, if we hit it right, what we're really doing is we're hitting the people who are already paying, the local residents that are already paying to be downtown, they work downtown, whatever, and trying to give them a little relief since they are helping us with our infrastructure. So we're in agreement. It's about finding that sweet spot of that we're not trying to increase the load, because that is why we're doing this.
Right.
But trying to help out and give some relief to the people who are already using downtown to begin with.
On the red light cameras, question came up yesterday about, you know, well, we haven't seen any reduction in red light running. In fact, it's gone up, or it's, you know, held steady or whatever. Of course, and I appreciate your answer, which I totally agree with, which is catch me in a year. You know, give it some time to right. work and let's see what we discourage or not. But I have a sort of a second level question, which is we're not so much trying to stop red light running as much as we're trying to stop crashes. And so to me, the real metric is not going to be, do we reduce infractions? The real question is going to be, at those intersections, if we look over history, have we reduced crashes? Because that's going to be the real test, right?
That's right. And that's, we're not, that's why, of course, we're going to monitor that as we go forward. But you talk about a lack of sample size. I already believe on 2,300 tickets in 1 month is a lack of sample size. Who knows what
sure.
comes back next month? Is it 1,500? Is it 3,000?
Right.
It's way too early. And I would exponentially increase that warning if we were to look at crashes in 1 month, right? Because of a couple things. Number one, you know, there's this theory out there that if you have red light cameras, that now it creates more fender benders, which, number one, we've talked about many
right.
times. I'd rather have that than a T-bone. But also might be that you aren't following normal driving rules as well. But I've looked at data, you know how I am, and yeah, there can be a temporary, that's the difference. Some people think it's permanent. There can be a temporary blip because it's just new, right?
Right.
Someone overreacts or someone's not paying as close attention. But all the data I've seen, and robust amount of data that I've seen as we looked into this, was that levels off and flattens out and decreases, you know, after a short period of time. So to me, even if we went to that, I'd have to look, even if we went to that intersection and there were zero crashes at all of them, I would never come out to a podium and say, hey, look, mission accomplished. There's been zero crashes, because it's just too early to say. I mean,
right.
who's to know that in a matter of a month? But to your point, absolutely. At the end of the day, this is why we're doing it. And I've said that since the beginning on this show and at the podium, I've said, if this doesn't decrease crashes, if we have more crashes or more injuries or more deaths somehow, then there's no reason to do this.
Right,
so,
that's the ultimate metric.
But we're not
right.
going to make that decision after a month or two.
No, I completely agree. Before we do the frivolous lightning round, I did want to just kudos. Oh, my God, 311 had a 2,000-ticket backlog, and now 2 years into your administration, you've got that down to being 50 to 80 open tickets at a time. I mean, amen, brother. Like, that's extraordinarily well done, both to you and your team. So I don't want to let that go without mentioning it, because that is a huge accomplishment. That's fantastic. All right. We always like to end with the lightning round, where I ask you some, you know, quick frivolous questions. At what distance do you start thinking it's better to fly than to drive? How far away? For DC, who flies a lot, and of course, Semi owns the airport. I mean, not you personally, but you're the mayor, you know. When do you start flying as opposed to driving? What distance?
You know what? I've had this conversation so many times in the last 2 weeks, because I just flew to Tampa. And to me, that's the line.
Tampa,
where
okay.
You have to go to Atlanta. You have to go to Atlanta and then down to Tampa. And by the way, a little birdie told me we might be doubling our jet service direct to Tampa on Breeze coming up this summer. But from 2 times a week to 4 times a week. But I would say it's about 7 hours, 6 hours, 7 hours. So, for example, I don't connect in Atlanta to go to Jacksonville. You know, like, that's 5 hours. You know, that's
yeah.
not – that doesn't make any sense. I think 7 with a connection is the minimum I'll do. You know, and I don't know. I don't know if that's the right answer or not, but
that's where you're at. Okay.
You
all
know,
right. I get it.
Yeah.
Are you a napper? Do you nap during the day routinely? Sometimes, never? If so, how long?
Oh man. No, not anymore. I used to be able to sneak one in, but I mean, gosh, once a year, maybe.
Oh, wow. All right.
You know, I mean, yeah, once every 6 months.
He's an anti-napper.
Depending.
All right. Because of convenience, or like your job, you can't get away with it, or like?
I think, you know, I'm in this job, it's like I feel guilty if I'm, you know, for an hour on the couch. My brain's always working, you know. That's how it is. It's like, what's going wrong? What do we need to be doing?
So, hey, you need to sharpen the sword, man. You need to, go play some golf, go play some tennis. It'll be okay. The city will go on without you.
Yeah,
exactly. Last one is a hoodie or regular sweatshirt or sweater if you're weird. Hoodie or sweatshirt?
You know what? I change it up. I'm wearing a sweatshirt right now, but yeah, I would say
no hand warmers.
Probably hoodie for the most part. Hoodie for the most part.
Hood or for the hand warmers?
I don't even use the hood that much. I think the hand warmers. That's why we live in Florida, Andrew.
That's it.
Don't use that hood that often.
100% with you. Nobody puts the hood up. I love that. Mayor DC Reeves, always a pleasure. Sir, we look forward to city council meeting tomorrow night. As always, thank you for your time. It's okay to take a nap once in a while. We'll talk to you next week.
All right,
thanks. 5:54 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Oh, this is actually kind of good news. You know that restaurant that we talked with Casey Jones about last week, City Councilman Casey Jones, that he's opening Reservoir in that building right kitty corner from PPD, right across from the community garden and the skate park down on Hayne Street. It's open. They opened yesterday. And so they're serving food there, you know, breakfast, lunch. That he and his wife, I think, are both running that. But anyway, I'm super eager to go down and try it. I love new restaurants. I love local things. I think that's such a great idea to renovate that old grocery store and turn it into a restaurant where you can go and get your coffee and get your pick-me-up or whatever good food in the morning. So the Reservoir, it's right downtown at 524 North Hayne Street. You can go get your food, and then you can wave to the cops and wave to the skaters and drive on by and say hi to Casey while you're there for me. 5:55 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
Jordan B. Peterson, We Who Wrestle With God Tour.
If you say the truth and nothing else, you'll have an immense adventure as a consequence. You won't know what's going to happen to you, but the truth will reveal the world the way it's intended to be revealed. And the consequence for you will be that you'll have the adventure of your life.
Live at Pensacola Bay Center, March 19th. Get tickets now at Ticketmaster.com.
Parents usually know if their children will argue over their inheritance, but this can be prevented. I'm Wesley Odom with Armada Advisors. No one wants to see their wealth wasted away because of poor planning. I've assisted several clients with estate planning ideas and sometimes have served as trustee or executor upon their death. Give me a call at 497-6167. Armada Advisors is charting a better course.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College on the Pensacola Expert Panel tomorrow at 10 a.m. Key Marine Center is sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service Technicians, they hire students from Georgetown Technical College. It's a dream team, so join them tomorrow at 10 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
News Radio 92.3 gets you live programming every day from 5 a.m. until 7 p.m. on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Just say no.
Got no reason for the things I fear, the things that plague me when I see and hear. Dimes a nickel and a nickel's none. I'll throw myself into the Sunday sun. A summer Sunday when you went insane.
They've been here several times, right? Played at Vinyl several times. 5:58 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'll go on here.
Tearing me apart. Jenny says, turn off the radio.
That's right. Jenny's always right. When she says turn up the radio, she means it. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, apparently the number of measles cases is still on the rise in West Texas after that outbreak they've had there. Health officials in Texas now saying at least 258 cases have been reported, and this is also across multiple states. Most of the cases are in unvaccinated kids in Texas, but cases have popped up in about a dozen other states as well that apparently may be connected. It's been 5 years now since Breonna Taylor was shot and killed after police performed a no-knock warrant at an apartment in Louisville, Kentucky. Democrat Representative Morgan McGarvey of Kentucky honored her on the House floor this week. Former Louisville Metro Police Department officer Brett Hankinson was convicted of violating her civil rights by shooting blindly into her apartment.
How long has Pope Francis been the Pope? Want to take a stab?
Oh, boy. I have
12
no
years, 2013, this day in history, elected
66th Pope. Listen on air at 92.3.